So, it's my pleasure to welcome for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Sherry Lovler. She is the author of this book that you see over here, but more than the author, also the painter and the calligrapher of this violin that she'll be telling us about. I could start showing you some of the images, which are amazing, but I think she's going to be doing that with some bigger versions thereof, and also about the process of writing this book. So please join me in welcoming Sherry Lovler.
Well, thank you all for coming, and thank you, Jim. Thank you, Rob. It's really an honor to be here.
Nice to see you.
Find my glasses, which I hope are here. Sorry about that. So I'd like to begin with having us arrive. And so I have a poem just for the occasion called Meditation. Stay here, my mind, who wants to wander on her own. Stay here, sit with me. Enjoy this place that houses you and nurtures you with food and wine. Stay here in silence. As thoughts arise, let them pass. Stay here and drink in gratitude for your lovely life and cool breezes and streams that run over your toes. Stay here while the moon moves and stars explode and crickets claim their ground. Stay here while the sun gently rises and sheds light on your eyes so you can see there is nowhere to go.
There's no what?
There is nowhere to go.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, can you all hear me? Generally?
I just missed that last
one. Okay.
You wanted us to go?
Well, easy come, easy go. So you can see there is nowhere to go. So, does anyone have the experience of a poem coming to you?
Yes.
Yeah. I think poetry comes that way. I think songwriting comes that way. A lot of things do. And what I tried to do was harness that energy. And I began writing poetry when I was 16. And from the age of 16 to 20, I remember my first poem, this is past grade school when we learned to write quote-unquote poems. Well, actually, it's kind of interesting. In fourth grade, my teacher who taught us about poetry, we always had to write a poem and do an image. And sure enough, that's what I do. I write poems and do images. So nothing changes while everything changes. But when I was 16, a friend of mine, it was her birthday, and it was actually a day past her birthday, and I was sitting in economics class, bored out of my mind, and I started writing this poem in the style of Dr. Seuss, because that's about all I knew, and it started with the thought that a bird told me it was your day. So it was this whole long poem about missing her birthday by just one day, but what day did I miss? Oh my, what a day. And it just went on and on. It was really a great way to pass through my economics class. And then I made it into a little card, and I gave it to her. And I drew drawings. I think I might have even sewn that one. And so for the next 4 years, I created all my own greeting cards with my own poems, and happily my parents saved a bunch of them, so I still have some of them. And at the same time, I was learning calligraphy. So I learned calligraphy. I'm from the Bronx. It was just a lucky thing. It was a graphic arts class, and we learned calligraphy, and I just totally loved it. So here I'm taking my two favorite things, writing poetry and putting them into these little cards. And I have over 50 poems. And somehow I knew that the poetry was important enough to save. And I have a little booklet handwritten over those 4 years of my poetry. And then what happened sometimes is I ended up forming a relationship with a guy who was a writer, and I stopped writing. And it was just like, whatever it was, I stopped. And then about 15 years ago, it was, I had just gotten divorced, and it was the first anniversary that wasn't what I called it, the first one, you get it. And it was a really hard day for me, and somehow this poem started coming, and I let it come, and it got me through the day. And so from that and some other poetry I wrote since, it just felt like this wonderful thing, and I wondered how to direct it so I don't have to just wait for a poem to come. So I created a little ritual that has changed, or has gotten perhaps even more ritualistic. Over the last 7 years when I started this work, now what I do is I write 2 days a week, two mornings, on Tuesday and Friday mornings. I don't answer the phone, I don't look at email, I get up and I get some tea, I come back to bed and I write, handwritten, in bed, in notebooks. And I invite a circle of dead poets, the angels of dead poets. And this has grown over the past few years. So it might have just started specifically when Maya Angelou died, because she's always the first one I mention. So I welcome Dr. Maya Angelou and Angeles Aaron, who is a spiritual teacher, not necessarily a poet. Seamus Heaney, the Irish poet that died fairly recently, mostly because I like the sound of his name. I don't really know his poetry. That's very cool. You know, welcome Seamus Heaney, you know. John O'Donohue, okay, a boring name, but an amazing poet and writer. Rumi and Rilke, because I love both of their works. I recently added Edna St. Vincent Millay, because someone kept sending me her poetry, and I thought, well, she needs to be here. Then I borrow the living angels of David White and Mary Oliver. Mm-hmm. So I have quite a reference here, and there's really the feeling that I don't do this alone. And that's really what inspired the entire book, is feeling connected and creating the atmosphere for the spirits or whatever to come and join me. So let me read some of their work. No, actually, and it's not that I feel like it's someone else's work, and it's not that I feel that I don't do this. I feel like, well, and we have to show up. You know, so I show up, and I do my part, and they do their part. And I've tried it without them, and it really doesn't work. And I've tried what I call writing pre-poems, where the poem really hasn't formed, and I figure they haven't really arrived yet, and so then I just write several pre-poems until the poem comes. And that's when I know they've joined me. And so I will read a poem called... I'll talk about this one in a little bit. Deeper.
That's the artwork.
This is the artwork for the book, and I'm going to talk about how the artwork starts. So let me read the poem, just give you a break from hearing me talk too much. Still talking, but anyway.
We came to hear you talk.
Oh, okay. Come home to your soul. This temporary world will only lead you to the edge. Nothing will get you past this one. Your desire to know that place deep within. The ground is not here to walk on. It is a thin layer to cross. Slip through into the underworld, the belly, the place you long to be, where wisdom dwells. Go naked. And the words here, the ground is not here to walk on, that's half of where the title came from, On Softer Ground. The other half was at an art opening at the JC, where I was looking at etchings. I got the word right now. and it was a process of etching called soft ground. And I never heard of that. And I'm looking at this etching, which I really loved, But I sort of got the tingles when I saw the word soft ground. And that morphed into on softer ground. That and feeling like the earth is a thin layer to cross. And that also comes out of some shamanic work I was doing with a woman who took me into the underground. So I'm gaining access from everything I do, everything I read. And actually, that brings me to what I read. So when I call in my spirit guides here, I also read from some book of wisdom. And so it is the reading that starts my poetry. So, and there was one book I was reading, it's by Bill Plotkin, called Nature and the Human Soul. It's a 450-page book, and it actually took me 4.5 years to write, and it's...
To read.
To read, right. Yes, I wish I had written that. He's a depth psychologist, and this book goes through the circle of life, from birth through death, from a eco point of view rather than an ego point of view. So, like, what if we did feel connected to everyone? What if we did care for the earth? You know, how do you raise your children under those kind of thoughts? And so a lot of my earliest poems were about playing in the puddles. I went through the whole circle of being a child, being a teenager, the journey in the garden, and all the way through old age and dying. And so that is my practice, is to read from some spiritual or wise book and capture, it might just be three words, a phrase. It's never a sentence. It's not enough for the copyright people to come and get me. Uh-huh. But it's inspired by something. And that's really been the basis of the poetry.
Sure.
Yes?
Would you be willing to read that first poem once again?
The meditation?
Once is never enough to me. The one you just read.
The one deeper, yes.
Yeah.
Happy to. Deeper. Come home to your soul. This temporary world will only lead you to the edge. Nothing will get you past this one, your desire to know that place deep within. The ground is not here to walk on. It is a thin layer to cross. Slip through into the underworld, the belly, the place you long to be, where wisdom dwells. Go naked. You're welcome. So, my New Year's resolution for 2010, and I think the only resolution I have ever kept, was to start a blog. And on this blog was going to be my poetry, but every poem had to have a painting. That was my rule. And the reason I did that, because I felt like I had opened this gateway with the poetry. And basically I consider myself a painter, an artist. And I was kind of stuck. I really wasn't doing the work that really pleased me. And so I wanted to somehow take that same gateway, that same connectedness, and bring that over into my art. And so I began with very quick drawings. I mean, the poetry comes really quick. I mean, once it starts, it really, I mean, my sessions are not no more than half an hour, and often very often less. And the poems just start from top to bottom, and once in a while I know the last sentence, and then I go there. But usually top to bottom, and then I edit out everything I can. And so I started doing these paintings that were as fast as the poetry. They were just really quick little things, and they're the first ones up on my blog. And then I started realizing that I had a lot of paintings in my drawers, and so I went through and started finding things I had, and it was amazing that they would match up with poems perfectly.
Retroactively.
Hmm?
The painting came after the poem.
In this case...
Before the poem.
Right, in this case the paintings came before the poem, completely separate. But I would find them, and it was like a homecoming. I mean, it was really like, you know, yes, now I know my purpose in life. For the painting is saying that. I'm still finding it fine. But so then I put on the blog, I had a whole series of paintings I had already done. And then I ran out of paintings. And that's when, as I say in my introduction, that's when the real work began, where I really needed to start painting. So when I write a poem, at the end of the poem, I ask for a title and I ask for a sketch. And the sketch might just be some lines, maybe a figure, maybe notes for color, just something very simple. So I remember where I was at the time I wrote the poem. And then when I go to paint, I read the poem, I look at my little sketch, I go into my studio and just kind of hold the poem with me. So I'm not illustrating the poem. And even though I'm a calligrapher, I am not lettering the poem, as many calligraphers do. So I'm creating something different, some kind of innate connection. And I think it works. I mean, sometimes I could tell you why something works, but it's mostly a feeling, and that's what I go by. And so this poem for Deeper, this was the above ground and the underground. And I started doing a lot of stuff with underground, but I work with ink. I'm, again, a calligrapher. I work with ink because that's my background, and water, and yummy paper. This was on Reeves BFK, which is this soft, this very soft paper. And then I hadn't done the black. And I don't plan any of these. This is just what happened with the water and the ink. But then I saw, then I did this line, and I thought, all right, cool. Above ground, underground, I could deal with that. So I started painting all these trees. They looked absolutely horrible. And so I have a few tricks up my sleeve. One is black gesso. Black gesso is this very flat, matte black that can cover anything. So I just covered my trees and it was perfect. The other thing is gold leaf. Part of my tradition of being a calligrapher and working with illuminated manuscripts, gold leaf will cover almost anything. And then my favorite is cropping. I could just crop out what I don't want. And I use cropping a lot with my work because I go in it with a very free spirit. I go in, I sort of have these different periods of working. So I start as wild as I can, with no concept except maybe some color, some theme from the poem, but not knowing what I'm going to do or where I'm going. And then I just do whatever happens. And then I often take my cropping tool. So I usually start on 22 by 30 inch paper, standard size watercolor paper. Take my cropping tools, which are these big L-shaped pieces of mat board that I've cut, and just move them around until something speaks to me. And so what I'm looking for is the story. What is it that is going to say something meaningful to me? So I find my part, and that might change, but at least I have a direction. So it goes from wild to honing down and honing down. And remembering not to get too precious about it. This next poem I wrote when Robin Williams died. And I had met him on a couple of occasions, so although we all feel it's personal, it felt a little personal. And so here I just kept writing poems, and nothing was coming. And I just considered them all my pre-poems. Until I was reading, someone had sent me a book, and I don't know why, but and the words, the flow of changing, and it wasn't just the flow of change, but the flow of changing, really stuck to me. And I wrote this one. Seasons pass in the flow of changing. Days drift that cannot be contained or held down, like music floating in the wind. This ephemeral life that we want to understand, want to catch like butterflies, tame like lambs, love like it will love us back the same. But the horizon can never be reached, no matter how far we travel. Here we are, dropped in the middle of the mystery, and there are things we simply will never know. And I'm just going to talk about the painting, then I'll read it again. So I've been trying to work larger. I've had a couple of commissions, including this one, which is actually on paper that's 52 inches tall and a roll of paper that's 30 feet long. And so the final of this is actually 52 inches by 34. And so I was continuing that process with this painting, and I work on the floor. And so I had, sometimes I work with these wide brushes. I bought one that was 6 inches wide. This one is done with a 6-inch wide brush, so you can get an idea of the scale. And then other times I work with a piece of mat board, a piece of cardboard like, that I dip in ink, and I'll make my marks, and it dries up in the process. And I love that kind of dry texture. So this was actually a very large circle on the floor, and it was one of these ones where I just did any old thing, and what wasn't really coming up with anything I particularly liked. I did have the poem in mind, and the circle was kind of the continuity of life, the mystery, the circle of life. Or others from the Japanese, the Enzo, the Chinese or Japanese meditation circle. So all that comes into play. And then in the middle of the circle, all of a sudden this thought came to me, Kante crayon. And Kante crayon is like a, at least how I buy it, is like a 3-inch wide stick that has four sides, and it's like a hard charcoal. And I just put it on the side and made a curvy line. And I thought, well, that looks kind of cool. And then I just did another and another and did the whole inside of the circle. But the whole thing wasn't speaking to me. And then I took out my cropping tools and came up with this. Later added some of these calligraphic marks and gold leaf. And one of the things, the same way I've been training myself with the poetry, is to train myself with the painting, but to really listen to whatever's coming through. So that thought, the Kante crayon, was something I honor. And then I ran to my where I keep all my stuff and got it and did it. And this happens now with colors of paint, with what tool to use, with just about anything. So I'm working very intuitively and have just been training myself to do this. So on that level, the poetry and the painting is caught up now to the poetry. And it took a long time, well, a couple of years, for actually where I felt that I was really getting some input. And I don't invite the poets. I mean, I'd be scared to be in a room with Picasso or, you know, some of these people. I mean, I don't invite the artists into the painting. I mean, I do like Moreau and Kandinsky and, of course, Picasso. And there's many others, but I haven't really set up that kind of a thing. But maybe that's to come. This ephemeral life. Sorry, the braces are a little hard to read. I'll do more readings in about 6 months, maybe. This ephemeral life. Seasons pass in the flow of changing. Days drift that cannot be contained or held down, like music floating in the wind. This ephemeral life that we want to understand, want to catch like butterflies, tame like lambs, love like it will love us back the same. But the horizon can never be reached, no matter how far we travel. Here we are, dropped in the middle of the mystery, and there are things we simply will never know. And that also came from everyone wondering, why did he do this? You know, what was going on in his life? And we're just not going to know, and we just need to accept that we're not going to know, as we don't know so many things. The sacred life. there comes a time when you want to run. Run as far away as you can. Run from your life. Run from the task that is so large it cannot be done. But your feet don't move. And slowly life opens up and help appears. Not in the form you expect, but in secrets and winding roads and gateways into the world you long for, but don't know how to reach. And the task doesn't get easier, but life gets more beautiful, with a richness you couldn't imagine, and a warmth you had never felt, as you directly face the immensity of what you are called to do. This one, everyone has these moments, I think, and it was a very personal poem for me, and I'm touched that it touches other people as well. So I want to talk about the calligraphy in the book. First of all, I think all the paintings are calligraphic, even calligraphy. But I lettered the title of every poem, and I bring it up now because this is actually my favorite one. And one of the things, when one is taught calligraphy and when I teach calligraphy again, I teach it in a disciplined way. There's a way to do it. There's strokes to learn. And then it takes years to kind of undo that in a way that's fresh and that's yourself. But you need to learn the proper way to do things first, because otherwise just going out and just doing some scribbling doesn't really make sense. I think that's probably in any field. So this was done, and I did hundreds of titles over the course of three weeks. I had the whole book done except the titles, and I just lettered them with, I should have brought the pen in. It's like a ruling pen. It's called a butterfly pen. And so the ink flows quite well out of it. And it was actually the hardest part of the whole book to do, was to do this lettering, to find the letters that went together. So even after hundreds of these, then I would, I didn't do hundreds of every one of them, but I did many, many of them. And then I would find, sometimes it just came out. Sometimes I had to cut and paste and put them together. And then I put them all together in Photoshop. And then I went back in pixel by pixel and touched them all up. So I probably shouldn't be telling you all these secrets, so you'd think I was this amazing calligrapher. But but my eye is actually a little bit better than my hand, I think. And I think that's good, because there's ways I could make it as good as I want to. And in my case, really trying to keep the life. I mean, so many things are deadened on a computer when you start touching up. But my whole thing was to keep that liveliness. So when you look at the book,
are you left-handed or right-handed?
I am right-handed. It's harder when you're left-handed. It's not impossible, but it is harder. Yes, I will. For you, since I know you love this poem.
You've been spying on my life over the last 4 months.
Say that again?
You've been spying on my life over the last 3 or 4 months. I'm telling my story.
The sacred life. There comes there comes a time when you want to run. Run as far away as you can. Run from your life. Run from the task that is so large it cannot be done. But your feet don't move. And slowly life opens up and help appears. Not in the form you expect, but in secrets and winding roads and gateways into the world you long for but don't know how to reach. And the task doesn't get easier, but life gets more beautiful, with a richness you couldn't imagine and a warmth you had never felt, as you directly face the immensity of what you are called to do. Mm-hmm. lighter. Great moments. And it's been rather recently that I've been putting realistic elements into my paintings. And the original is actually at the Calabi Gallery. This is Dennis Calabi of the Calabi Gallery on 10th Street in Santa Rosa. And this began as, I had the poem written already, and I'll, let me read it first so you'll get it better. Great moments. Great moments dwell in the grasses and the trees, in the fluttering light that surrounds us. They live in the stories that are shared from one person to another, in the deep songs of the soul. They open the door to love, propel us from here to there, make ourselves, and that's C-E-L-L-S, make ourselves feel alive. Great moments tap as gently as a beating heart, come and go like whispers in the wind. So the painting for this one began without the heron. That was actually the last thing I did. It began as some grasses in kind of this marsh-like field. And this is a gold leaf and palladium leaf. And the painting was okay. And I had this up on Facebook, kind of asking people, should I go with the gold for both, palladium for both? No one suggested gold and palladium, but that's what I ended up doing. But my mother's comment was, go with the gold and move on. And and I still got that rebel in me. And I thought, all right, she wants me to move on, no way. I'm going to take a good painting and make it better. I didn't tell her this, but anyway.
You did move on.
I didn't, well, I moved inward. I moved inward, yes, instead of on. But anyway, and so I kept staring at it, and this is what I do with my work. I stare at it. I spend much more time staring at the work than actually painting. And there was a mark under here that I really didn't like, and there was this, a lot of blackness in here. And as I stared at it, well, actually a flamingo appeared. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd. I don't know if I'm going to do that. So I said, no, come on. And then I just stared a little bit longer, and the heron showed up. And all right, this is kind of cool. So then I didn't have my own photo of a heron. I went online and I compiled them from several different ones so no copyright police would chase me down. And then I copied the heron. I had to make the neck and the head go over that mark I didn't like. And then I painted this with white gouache, three layers of it to go over the black. And maybe acrylic would work better. I'm chemically sensitive and there's very few acrylic things I could use. I can use gesso, I can use matte medium, but I think the paint has formaldehyde in it. I don't know if all the brands do, but anyway, so it was gouache, and then I went over it with more gouache and some color pencils and charcoal, just whatever it took to get the image I wanted. I mean, I'm really not a purist. I'm not just going to use a certain thing. It's like whatever it takes. And I didn't, I practiced the neck. That was the only thing I did. And I really don't do this kind of work, or I didn't. But I kind of get bored with practicing. So I just went ahead and did it. And, you know, if I ruined the painting, I ruined the painting. But I just kept working at it and working at it, and I ended up really liking. And certainly that's a great moment if you could catch a heron in the marsh. So I thought it worked. Great moments dwell in the grasses and the trees, in the fluttering light that surrounds us. They live in the stories that are shared from one person to another, in the deep songs of the soul. They open the door to love, propel us from here to there, make ourselves feel alive. Great moments tap as gently as the as a beating heart, come and go like whispers in the wind. And actually, the realistic painting I did before the heron, so I did have a little bit of practice for the heron, was my one with the eagle. And I did some work. It was very interesting. I do the art trail tours where people come to my home, and a woman bought one of my paintings. And I'll sneak ahead because it was this painting. And she like looked at everything, and then all of a sudden she goes, "I'll take that one." And you get the feeling like, "Are you sure?" You know, it just happened so quickly that I didn't expect it. But she didn't need it right away, so she left it at my house, and then I had an opportunity to talk to her when she came back. And it turns out that she's a depth psychologist and studied with Bill Plotkin, who I said I had worked with. And these are the kind of things that are starting to happen in my life. And she kept saying she did deep imagery work. And I kept asking, like, what is that? And she would describe it to me, and then she looked at all my work, and she goes, "Well, it's what you're doing." Mm-hmm. And it was so nice to finally figure out what I'm doing. But anyway, I had a session with her where we went through my chakras, and I came up with a soul guide for each of my chakras. And my bottom chakra was the eagle. So I'm trying to think what came first on this one. You know, I actually think the painting came first on this one. For most of them, the poems come first. But this one, I was doing all this kind of very loose stuff, and there was this stick coming out, and I just looked at it, and I just kind of saw this eagle, and being that I'm just newly acquainted with my eagle, it just seemed perfect to paint it. And then I wrote the poem. I actually, this is a little secret, but it doesn't matter. I actually titled this Inner Resource. And when I started to letter this, the I just didn't look good as the first letter. And so then I changed it to Soul Guide and was much happier with that. So it's called Soul Guide. My eyes, clouded by what they see, call me to look deeper. My mind, closed by what it knows, asks me to feel my way into the sanctity of life. Wisdom comes in symbols from sources beyond reason. The unreasonable becomes my truth. The journey becomes my guide. So I'll read that again too, but when I was designing the book, so I wrote the whole book, did the calligraphy, the poetry, and I also designed the book and got it, put it into InDesign and shipped it off to the printers. But one of the most interesting things to do in this book was to come up with a color. And so for each painting, I would, in Photoshop, grab a color with the color tool and then change it. Usually I lightened it and maybe grayed it a little bit more. My idea was to give the eye a place to rest. So you look here and you read and not be caught up on that color. And so I laid out all the pages on the floor and moved things around and chose my colors. And then actually, every page here is like a 2-5% of this color. And then the lettering here is a 50% between this and this. So I did all this crazy math. But it worked. There were a few changes in the end, but that was a very interesting process to work with the color. Soul Guide. My eyes, clouded by what they see, call me to look deeper. My mind, closed by what it knows, asks me to feel my way into the sanctity of life. Wisdom comes in symbols from sources beyond reason. The unreasonable becomes my truth. The journey becomes my guide. And this is kind of what I'm living with. The journey becomes my guide. Because what I'm doing now is letting this book take me on a journey. And, I mean, this is just the beginning. I actually printed it in July with a company I found online called Lightning Source. And it came, the pages were kind of dull, and I wasn't very happy with it. And I had printed a previous book that was printed in China that I worked with a local print broker, and the quality was beautiful. And I didn't want to put the money into having to pay for 1,000 copies up front and do all this stuff, but I realized I had to. And even if I didn't get the money back, it was like I needed to be proud of the book so I can go and show it to people and do a reading like this. So I did have it printed in China, and it was just in January when I got the batch. So it is still fairly new. And it is leading me in these wonderful directions and some great book exchanges with people I would not have expected. I was in my acupuncturist's office the other day, and I come out of the office, and this woman is sitting there. He bought the book and he had it in his office. She's sitting there reading my book. And I looked at her and I said, "That's my book." And she was like ready to give it to me as if I had left the book there. I said, "No, I wrote it." And she was just like floored. And so, you know, we started talking, and then she mentioned her book. And I said, "What book is that?" And her and her husband had written this book called The Almanac for the Soul. A beautiful book. And I looked at that, and it was thick. I didn't have time to really read it. And I said, "Would you like to do an exchange?" And she said yes. And I just got the book a couple days ago. And I'm actually gonna go out of order here and read the book that was inspired by their almanac. And since it's day by day, so I read the introduction of this almanac, and then I went to March 23rd, which was yesterday. And it was talking about the beginning of spring and how in spring you still have the remains of last year, of the dead stuff from winter. And in spring we get to see both. I mean, we're always surrounded by birth and death, but it's not always so clearly in our view. Last year's stalks, ruffled and gray, stand next to flowering tops of forgotten kale. Leeks popping up from leftover roots, the old and the new together in one breath, in one view. My heart fresh, yet worn from thoughts not yet smoothed by time. Spring brings its promises of new growth, a clean palette to work with on the color wheel of life. The full moon paves the way. A robust energy rises, sporadic at first, but palpable even on the darkest days. So this one...
That's her poem or your poem?
Oh, this is my poem.
Oh.
This is my poem inspired by
her book.
By that book. So this is what I do. It's like I find something new and something starts the poem.
That's
what
it is.
I will read that one again. Thank you. March 23rd. And it wasn't on a Tuesday or a Friday, so this is actually getting kind of interesting. Last year's stalks, ruffled and gray, stand next to flowering tops of forgotten kale. Leeks popping up from leftover roots. The old and the new together in one breath, one view. My heart fresh, yet worn from thoughts not yet smoothed by time. Spring brings its promises of new growth, a clean palette to work with on the color wheel of life. The moon paves the way. A robust energy rises, sporadic at first, but palpable even on the darkest days. So, yeah, see what comes out of that one. I'm curious. So, thinking about darkest days, somewhere here. This one's called Saying Goodbye. And your timing was perfect because I'm going to give this to you later to go home with, the one you missed. This was writing about the last time I saw my father, who died 12 years ago. It took our whole lives to see each other, to see beyond the stuff that fathers and daughters hold. For a second, I saw you. I saw you as you always wanted to be seen. And in that moment, love flowed between us like never before. It was more than knowing it was goodbye. It was, in fact, hello. And though it seemed late in our lives, it was perfect, because I saw you. I saw you with my soul, and though words cannot express that feeling, I know you took it with you, as much as I know anything. And this was, I was in my parents' house, my father was in bed, and we knew he was dying, and he was a craftsman. He was by trade he was an engineer, but his hobby was, he was a very fine craftsperson, and he could do things out of wood and do very handy kind of person. And the last 5 years of his life, he was doing stone sculptures with tools, and just small ones, but if you could imagine a perfect dolphin jumping out of a wave, that's what he did. That was one of his sculptures. And one of them was, the last one he was working on was, my company is called Ink Monkey Press, and my logo was this kind of a monkey. So ink monkeys were, the ancient Chinese scribes had pet monkeys that would grind their ink and turn their pages. And I have no idea if this is true, but but I read it in a Hong Kong newspaper and took the name for my business.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Exactly. So I drew this image of this monkey, and he was carving it, and I hadn't seen it, and it was only partway through. And I said, Dad, I haven't seen the ink monkey yet. And he said, it's in the garage. So I ran to the garage, and there it was, and it was really lovely. And I came back and I said, Dad, it's beautiful. And it was like the circle had formed, because it felt like all my life I was searching or wanting his approval, especially for my art. And then in the end, I gave him mine, my approval. And maybe that's what he was searching for as well. I have no idea. So it took our whole lives to see each other, to see beyond the stuff that fathers and daughters hold. For a second, I saw you. I saw you as you always wanted to be seen. And in that moment, love flowed between us like never before. It was more than knowing it was goodbye. It was, in fact, hello. And though it seemed late in our lives, it was perfect because I saw you. That was my New York accent coming out. Because I saw you. Sorry. I saw you with my soul, and the words cannot express that feeling. I know you took it with you as much as I know anything. I am going to just read one more and then open it up if anyone has any questions or things to say. So there are 24 poems in the book, and I'll end with Songbird. I'll read it first and then I'll talk about it. A short, sweet poem. Look, look, what have I been given? Between the grasses and the bird's song, the roses in bloom and the butterflies, between the morning star and the rings of Saturn. Look, look, I have another day to live.
What's the last two words?
Look, look, I have another day to live.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, this painting came out of some lettering I was doing, upside down. Can't read it anyway, it doesn't really matter. Some experimental lettering where I did some really free-flowing strokes for the downstroke, and then every cross stroke had this kind of wedge shape part to it. And then I started lettering some alphabet here and really not liking what I was doing. And I was at Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. I was actually taking a workshop. And a very dear friend of mine, another calligrapher and painter, was sitting next to me. And I just started moaning and groaning. It was like, ugh, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Nothing's coming out of this. And she reminded me. She goes, that's what you always say. And then all of a sudden it gets birthed. and I had done these two strokes and then just held it vertically. And the bird, other people think it's some other weird animal, but and the bird appeared. And then it was sort of like the feathers here, and I filled them in with gold leaf and put a little gold leaf dot for the eye, and I had my songbird. These became musical notes instead of letters. Yes, doing art is, I've never given birth, so I could say that kind of lightheartedly, but it does feel like I'm creating friends. And the same thing with the poems. I'm creating friends. Songbird. Look, look, what have I been given? Between the grasses and the bird's song, the roses in bloom and the butterflies, between the morning star and the rings of Saturn. Look, look, I have another day to live.
More.
One more.
One more? Read it twice, please.
You've got me trained. Oh, the title piece, which I have a little story about. It was actually done just a little bit later than this time last year because the jasmines were in bloom. It was actually toward the end of the jasmines, but I did. There was a show at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, and Carolyn does work there, and she was curating the show. It was a black and white show, and Paul Motter, who has a Paul Motter gallery up in Healdsburg, an amazing gallery, was a juror. And I really wanted him to not only see my work, but to like my work. So I had that in mind. And I don't usually do works for a show. I usually have my work's done and choose something. But anyway, I did these large calligraphic marks, and this is also larger. It's 22 by 30, a little bit less. I cropped this one just a little. And then, so I had these big marks, and then again, I just stared and stared at the piece, and I knew it wasn't done, and I didn't know what it needed. And then I'm out in my garden just smelling the jasmine. And it was like, all right, that's it. And it was a little late in the season, but I still went around with my camera into the whole neighborhood and found the jasmine everywhere and took photographs and then came home and painted. Actually, what I learned, I did a lot of trial and errors. This one I had to try out because I didn't want to ruin my big strokes. And I painted each one with white gouache because I had to go over the black again. And then I learned that I didn't have to paint the flowers. All I had to do was put in the shadows. And I did that with pastel, and then painted in the little pieces. So anyway, so this got in, and it not only got in, but Carolyn awarded me the coordinator's award. So I thought, all right, there's something to this piece. So then I made it my cover piece. Which I know it didn't have much to do with ground, but you can't grow jasmines without ground. So I think it actually does.
They're very soft.
Yes, and it is soft. It is soft. Wait, I have to find it first.
She's getting there.
On softer ground. Like the shedding of snake skin, my ego peels away, making room for my soul to blossom. This gentle unfolding creates a base to live by. Connected to the whole, I feel rooted, yet free, realness expressing itself. My soul searches for other exposed souls, as naturally as my ego can pinpoint other egos at work. Groundwater turns into mist as the sun breaks through the clouds this morning. I'll read it again. On softer ground. Like the shedding of snake skin, my ego peels away, making room for my soul to blossom. This gentle unfolding creates a base to live by. Connected to the whole, I feel rooted, yet free. Realness expressing itself. My soul searches for other exposed souls, as naturally as my ego can pinpoint other egos at work. Groundwater turns into mist as the sun breaks through the clouds this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you on behalf of Many Rivers Books and Tea. Mm. Thank you all for coming out tonight for this event. So we have a couple of last minute things. We have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it. This is a nonprofit church owned and operated institution, and we share what you donate with our speakers and retain half to maintain this space for further such events. So I encourage you to do that. I encourage you as well to look at the book itself over here on the table as you go out the door, and to also come back and take a look at the store when we're back in our normal configuration. Jim has a message.
Cards and
prints. We also have, Sherry has brought some cards with her artwork.
And poems. The poems are on the back.
And the poems are on the back. And then prints over there. And they are for sale. So you are welcome to check those out as well, in addition to the full book. Thank you so much for coming tonight. And we'll look forward to seeing you again at Many Rivers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I saw your tears.
And you met her.
I met her at Dennis's gallery.
He had
sometimes he had a musical thing there.
And he passed away on
for the art there. Because it's amazing art there. It's like
it's
sort
funny.
Of
my father died on March 22nd.
And
I called my mother on that day.
It's really easy to get to.
And
I was
this year,
I
had
him
on my calendar, but I didn't look.
You can get there
and
yeah,
and I hadn't talked to her for that week. And I called her, and she goes,
but anyway,
you always call on this day. And I thought, on Tuesday,
I was going to get there.
And it's not right anymore.
Couple weeks ago, I got a parking place.
And you know, I don't know. I said, well, I forgot to get a candle.
Yeah, they're kind of dark.
Candle.
I just got a lighter here, but I love the details.
Yeah.
And I swear, after I got
then I actually
swear
I
got
a photograph.
Just because I like the detail. But I just got some
of
those kind of...
I told my mother I did it.
They're silvery gray, you know, like, just have a lighter...
What are you doing?
...letter type on this card at Brooklyn.
I didn't say anything. It's like, all right,
I had contacts waiting up the street
but
for like the last year.
Never felt
all
that
I need
at all.
Is like
so
enough time to put them on and walk down, walk around and
anyway,
see how they work. I think I do it. But I don't know. You know, it's scary. I mean, I've heard, I see tears in my but one of my friends, his wife, got a really bad social contact. You know what?
In a few words, he writes a lot of words
negatively.
I had a friend who
You pay for it. Okay, good.
Thank you. It's so beautiful. Your work and your process. Your process. Just very. I really liked hearing about. What it takes to create the photograph, you know, the intention.
And your name again?
Lauren,
to you, you want me to do it?
Sure.
Once you let that go, you can have more vitality. We're living in it. There's no escaping it.
It's a song.
So, be aware that we want to get out, but we can't.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm a psychologist, and I like I was just thinking about this poem, The Sacred Life. Sometimes I want to share poetry with clients. But it seems so risky because you don't know what they're going to make on the same poem.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But I think the idea is just to ask the process what comes up. But sometimes I think that comes with poetry as a potential.
Some words come up.
Yeah. Well, this particular poem was part of my own therapy.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe.
Yeah. So, I just thinking about somebody I saw today who's really stuck. Well, more than one person.
Uh-huh. Well, that's why they come to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And this could be really helpful.
Good.
It's
not a good. I'd be honored for you to share it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm just glad when I get people to laugh.
No, you create the sweet environment of well, you're going to the while you're weaving it as what you're
great.
I actually took some notes.
I saw you noted. Sure. Yes.
Well, you inspired me for some things that I want to remind you. Like, I like that. I think you should do that reading it twice. I think that really helps.
Yes.
Because like the first time you kind of get the turf, but the second time you notice more of the details.
Yes.
And I liked how you read it and then talked about the picture and then read it again. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah, that was great. I'm glad he asked for it.
Very interesting. Yeah.
You feel good now?
I feel really good. Yeah, I'm very pleased.
So,
you want to go out? You have a little time?
Yeah, I allotted that if that's what you wanted.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone else wants to, but I'm just happy just going with you would be fine. So,
show and tell.
Yes, I did. So,
it's just a long shoelace.
Let's not trip on that.
Yes, well, you know. Wabi Sabi is about time, right? Wabi Sabi?
Well, I don't know if he would use it in that case.
That's the right word, though, right? I'm getting the phrase right?
It's Wabi Sabi, yes.
That's really pretty with the pink.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. This is a birthday present from my sister, and I don't usually wear pink, and I was just up in Healdsburg the other day, and they had the sidewalk sale, and it was like...
It looks very comfy.
It is. And it was like, do I dare do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, it's flattering. This is nice, and from a little bit of a distance, it gave nice interest to the outfit.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because it's a little stronger than the outfit here.
Uh-huh.
She might know who they are.
Yeah. It's nice because it balances off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a girl, I think. It's a thing. What can I do?
Well, I figured the black would balance.
I'm not a girl. I'm not a girl.
Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it pulled the black back.
What was it?
I can't imagine what it's like being a girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your name?
Yeah, Adam.
Adam, hi. Nice to meet you.
You too, yeah.
And you're friends with?
Chance.
With Chance, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I got him.
You got him here. Well, thank you.
He's walking by. Come in here. And he did. I don't want to
do that right now. Thanks.
Good. Good work.
So where's your new next? Where's your next book?
I like it.
Good.
I don't know. No, I have nothing lined up right now.
Did you make it?
I haven't yet tried Copperfield.
Did you make it?
I'm trying to get it into Copperfield. I wanted to give this place a chance.
Did you paint the shirt? You did?
Yeah.
Would you paint it with? Anyway, I'm going to go to Copperfield and see what I can do there. It's a little hard because... because I'm not known, and so people don't come out a lot. But I need all your email addresses. If you want.
That's for your friend.
That's my friend, but there's more than one.
Well, Chance knows a lot.
Yeah, so I need help gathering a crowd. So,
You know what you could do?
Email. Do you have an email address?
Sure.
Well, for the dance community, you can have people dancing to your
poetry. Yeah, why don't you come dance with us? And then you leave.
Well, I don't dance. I mean, I dance. Oh, the soul thing. Where do you do that?
Right here, it's hot.
Friday nights and Sunday. Maybe it's Sunday. This whole big piece people moving to the
well, I figured that would help have some.